Last week we talked about the names that Cain and Hevel received from Chava, as well as what their jobs, their occupations were. We said that Cain, his name, which is connected to Kona, acquisition, was a result of perhaps Chava's ego, over interest in herself, and it was my child, and that had an impact on who Cain himself became. And therefore, he chose a job, which also is a reflection of one's own personal success. Although, of course, we know that that was anyway the curse. B'zeh asapecha, Hashem said, you're going to work the land now, and that was going to be everyone's occupation. But to become dedicated to that job, perhaps, meant you were interested in your own stuff. A farmer feels pride in his own possessions. A farmer feels good about his own investment of self in the land, and it's permanent, it's staying right there. And it's perhaps a little more connected to one's overinflated ego, or at least runs the risk of that. The Torah has responses to that, and all kinds of halachas we mentioned, of how Israel would one day be an agricultural society, and yet have those dangers put to rest by halachas that would deal with that. That was Cain. And Hevel, the word Hevel connected to moving, transient. That's the translation of Hevel. Like in modern Hebrew, the word Chevrat Hovala means a moving company. So Hevel, he was named that, according to one Medrash. He was born after they were sent out of Gan Eden. And Hevel was called that because at this point, Chava was a little more reflective. Life isn't what you think. It's not all perfect like Gan Eden, like you had. You're not going to necessarily have everything you thought you were going to have. And with a name like that, that meant that Hevel had maybe a better chance, if that really impacted who he was, a better chance of having a more reflective and more connected to God temperament. And he chose a profession of being a shepherd, just like we know Moshe Rabbeinu was a shepherd, David HaMelech was a shepherd, Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, all our forefathers were shepherds. The Egyptians did not like shepherds, because it was the opposite of their agricultural society, a society of competition. We mentioned last week that being too deeply involved in agriculture means that you could actually come to war over territory. The word lechem, which grows from the ground, is related to the same root of the word milchama, war. And the Egyptians enslaved others because of their pride in their successes and their rights to them, their rights since they are stronger, more powerful. And they hated the notion of shepherds. Exactly for this reason, as we've explained. So let's move on. So Perek Dalet Pasuk Gimel. Vayihi miketz yamim. And it was after some time had passed. After all, at this point, Cain's already planted and he's seen some success in his fields. No doubt Hevel too. He's watched his flock grow and to many, many sheep, and he was doing well. Vayave Cain mipri ha'adama mincha l'Hashem. And Cain brought from the fruit of the ground, from the fruit of the ground, an offering to God. The word mincha, Hirsch suggests, is related to the word nacha, which means to lead. The shepherd leads his flock. The commander leads his army. In short, a leader or commander guides his subordinates. And he says, perhaps this is also the meaning of the word mincha. The offerer submits to the leadership and authority of another, or acknowledges his lordship. In other words, the mincha is a sign of homage. So that we find later when Yaakov Avinu gives a gift to his brother Esav, and he's afraid, and he wants to tell Esav, you have nothing to be worrisome that I'm now powerful and I'm going to threaten you. He gave him a mincha to show that he was really subservient to him. It's a sign of homage. And when we bring a carbon mincha, Hirsch later will develop this in the Torah, as he does often here in Bereshit in the early parts. He's dropping a hint So how his whole understanding of Karban Mincha and how it fits into other Karbanos will play out. So here's the first hint of that idea right now. So before we get into the exact Karbanos and Hevel's Karban, just one thing to point out. Idolatry did not exist yet. And Hirsch points out, though, and I'm sure he's talking against the Rambam in Moreh Nevuchim, just like the Ramban does as well in Parshas Noach. The Ramban argues on the same Rambam. The Rambam writes somewhere that Karbanos are a concession to polytheism, that the Jews, when they left Egypt, they were deeply enmeshed in such a society of idolatry and polytheism, and we needed to have something that we were familiar with, so Hashem acknowledged that and gave us the idea of Karbanos. And the Ramban was very upset with the Rambam for writing this. He says, Noach, when he came out of the Teva, there was no idolatry, and he's still bringing Karbanos. So Hirsch points out a similar thing right here. There was no such thing as idolatry in the world at this point. And here they are bringing Karbanos. So obviously, and he says more than that. He says, there were other things idolaters did. They prayed. Should we get rid of davening? Because people misuse everything, so everything's thrown out? Obviously not. It's a matter of how you do it. Okay, so let's read some psukim. So Kayin brought from fruit of the ground a minchat Hashem. Vehevel, and Hevel, hevi gam hu. He also brought mi bechoros tzono, from the firstborn of his flock, u michel vehen, and from the best of them. Vayisha Hashem el Hevel vel minchaso, and God turned to Hevel and his offering. But to Kayin and to his mincha, Hashem did not turn. Kayin was very angry. And his countenance fell. He was depressed. So let's slow this down and let's look carefully at what's going on and what they brought, what Hevel's response was to what Kayin brought, and some other phrases here that will open up the whole subject. First of all, notice that Kayin didn't really care very much as to what he was bringing. It just says, "Vayove Kayin mipri ha'adama mincha l'Hashem." He brought of the fruit. It sounds like, you know, he had a full silo of grain and everything was going great. And he said, "Oh yeah, yeah, God gave me this. I got to give something to God. You got to give some donation to the shul. Got to give something." So he took from the fruit something without being so careful as to what he was selecting. It wasn't really that important. He basically wanted to be Yitzhak Zayin because, after all, you know, God gave me this stuff. You know, some people who are amassing wealth, they got a big bank account and they got a fancy estate, an amazing garden and three cars and everything's fancy. Oh, yeah, yeah, you got to give a donation to the shul also. Got to give something to God. And there's something lacking in that attitude. The Hevel, Hevi Gamhu, Pasuk Dalet, Hevel also brought. And what did Hevel bring? He brought Mibachoros Tsono, from the firstborn of his flock, U Mechel Vehen, and from the best of them. Well, that's a whole idea. That's an entire attitude of the firstborn and the best of the firstborn. He must have had many, many firstborn, you know, maybe hundreds and thousands of sheep. And of the firstborn, he took the best of the firstborn. Now Hashem turned to Hevel and his mincha. Notice that it doesn't say Hashem turned to Hevel's mincha. Hashem turned to Hevel. Vayisha Hashem el Hevel vel minchasa. It was the person, Hevel, that Hashem was most impressed with. The attitude behind the carbon and to his mincha. And again, ve'el Kayin vel minchaso lo sha'ah. To Kayin and to Kayin's mincha, Hashem didn't turn. So, essentially, Hevel had the right attitude. Let me just read you the way Hirsch puts it. He who offers the first and the best attaches primary importance to his relationship with God. This relationship is his foremost concern, to which everything else in life is merely subsidiary. What is more, offering the first is always regarded as a substitute for dedicating all the rest. In other words, the way Hevel felt, Everything, my whole life, whatever he gives me, whatever Hashem gives me, should be given back to God. Of course, I can't give it all away. I need to function. I need to eat. I need to have a life. But really, if I could, I would give it all to Hashem. And I have to find a way that everything about my life should be dedicated to Hashem. So he gives the very first and the best of the first as a symbol that really everything that's afterwards, everything, not just the first, but I really care that everything should be in relationship to Hashem. That's Hevel's attitude. And that's what Hashem most appreciated. But there's more than that going on here. If you look carefully at Pasuk Dalet, it says, "V'hevel hevi gam hu mibechoros tzono." Hevel also brought. That expression, also brought, indicates that really one wouldn't have expected Hevel to bring it all. Kayin is the firstborn, and it was like that for a long, long time. And that's the way one day it will be when Mashiach comes again. But the firstborn is the representative of the family. And Kayin brought already. He brought a carbon. So one might ask, Hevel, he's also bringing, meaning even though his older brother brought, he's also bringing. So that indicates, the way Hirsch puts it, it's a silent protest against the Bechorah of his older brother. What right does my brother have to represent me in spirit if that's his attitude? If he doesn't really want to dedicate his life to Hashem and he brings some leftovers as an afterthought to God, well, that's not what I want represented. If he's going to be the older brother, the leader, and the spiritual representative and include me, then he has to have my attitudes. But if he doesn't, I'm going to have to go my own and represent myself. So v'hevel hevi gam hu, he also brought, because his brother wasn't representing him. His brother couldn't be that Bechor for him, and he didn't really deserve it. It was a silent protest against Kain's right to be the Bechor. And Hashem, apparently, at least at this point, was accepting this idea. Hirsch does mention Vayisha Hashem El Hevel. Vayisha Hashem turned to him is not the same as Vayifen. Vayisha is a little more mild. He turned like Lefi Sha'a. At this moment, Hashem turned away from Kayin and was more interested in Hevel, but it wasn't like a permanent rejection of Kayin. It was still an opportunity for Kayin to get it right. But for this moment, the attitude was correct the way Hevel had it, and it was wrong the way Kayin had it. The notion that the firstborn represents the family is ancient, and unfortunately, we find many firstborn in history that, unfortunately, they don't get to keep it. Reuven lost his Bechorah, and we find that all the Bechorim in the Midbar, they lost their rights to the firstborn, all the Levim got that. We also find that Esav lost his Bechorah. So this is an old story. Hirsch mentions that at the end, when Mashiach comes, then Kol Seir B'Yerushalayim will be Yehuda Kodesh. Then every pot in Yerushalayim and in Yehuda is going to be holy, meaning every Jewish home will be permeated with such holiness that every family will have a proper attitude and every Bechor will represent the family again. And he says, apparently, this is only going to happen when Tzemach Hashem comes, when Mashiach comes. Then priesthood and kingship will be a dual crown by one person. At that point, I guess, with the lead of HaMashiach is going to show us how to be a leader and how to have the right spirit, then it's going to influence every home, and every home will be able to have a Bechor the way it should be. But we're not there yet, and at the end of history, that'll happen again. So this is what upset Kayin so much. Hevel, his younger brother, had really upstaged him, not on purpose. He just couldn't tolerate having this bad attitude representing him. And Hashem turns to Kayin, and he says, "Vayomer Hashem el Kayin, Lama charalach, why are you distressed? Why are you so angry? V'lama naflu fanecha, and why is your countenance fallen? Why are you depressed?" There's a response. There's a way to fix this. Now listen carefully to the way Hirsch reads this pasuk. Halo, see, im tetiv se'es. The word se'es, Hirsch says here, means privilege. The privilege of the firstborn. We hear so much in our current events about privilege. When I was training in CPE, I kept on hearing white privilege, that you think that you've got life smiling at you, and you do. What about us that don't? I heard a lot about privilege as I was learning about cultural humility. Well, here Hashem is telling Kain, You do have privilege, but it better be used for the right purpose. You're the Bechor. And let's see, and you should see to it, imtetiv se'es, whether you will use your position of privilege for good, imtetiv, v'im lo se'tiv, or not for good. Pause. There's a pause here. If you look at the trup, it tells you that's the way to read the pasuk. Take a pause. Your choice, how you're going to choose to use this privilege. La Pesach chatos rovetz. La Pesach, lying at the door is chatos. Chatos, sitting there lying at the door. It's crouching, sitting at the door. That's sin. Sin sits at the door outside your house. You're not necessarily going to sin. V'eilecha teshukaso, its desire is to you. The ata tim sholbo, and you will rule over it. There's a lot going on in this pasuk. Again, first of all, Hashem tells Cain, imtetiv se'es v'im lo se'tiv, that your se'es is all up to you. Your privilege, will you be tetiv or im lo se'tiv? What are you going to do with this privilege? Are you going to let it take over you? And you say, I'm the firstborn and I got the rights, I'm the leader and I have power, and then misuse the power? Or will you do the good with it? And all the good that Hashem gives you. You have desire. You have your physical wealth, being a farmer. People have sensual things pulling at them. What are you going to do with those things? La Pesach chatos rovetz. Sin lies, it crouches. Hirsch says, the word rovetz means lies calmly. Those who want to say out of this pasuk that man is almost doomed to follow his evil inclination, and that the word rovetz means like a wild animal crouching, ready to attack, almost without the ability to defend oneself. He says, and Hirsch has this ability to know this, you won't find one time in all of Tanakh where the word rovetz means this. Rovetz means crouches, sits quietly. In other words, the Yetzer Hara, the evil inclination, waits outside calmly. He's outside, and he's not controlling your life. V'eilecha teshukaso, it wants you. It wants to see what you're going to do, like we said in the beginning of the pasuk. Will you do good or not with the privilege, with the position, or with the temptations, with the tools that Hashem has given you? But what does it really want? It wants the atah tim shol bo, that you should master it. It doesn't say tichbosh, that you should conquer it, that squash it and destroy it. Because there's no such thing as a gift from Hashem that should be destroyed. As I'll just read you the words of Hirsch about that. No human quality is in itself good or bad. Everything depends on moral use. Indeed, there is abundant blessing in the power of sensuality, which is the prerequisite for man's attainment of virtue. And he goes on to say, without having these things pulling at you, there would be no free will, because you'd be like a malach. But no, Hashem wants these things, and he wants us to master all of these things, these physical things in this world. This is exactly the point. V'atah tim shol bo, rule over it, guide it. That's the whole purpose. Its purpose and its mission is, its longing is towards you. It wants you to make use of the things it presents to you, but in the right balance, not to get so sucked in that it becomes your Lord and you become lost in all of that. So about this, he has two beautiful proofs for this very idea. One is a Gemara in Bava Basra, Daf Tes Zayin, Amud Aleph, that says the following. Yored, that the Yetzer comes down from heaven, umisa'e, and it tempts. But then the ole, and then it goes back up, umargis, and it complains. In other words, the Yetzer says, I don't understand, Hashem. You sent me down there to tempt people. Well, guess what? I succeeded. And now they're in bad shape. They're in worse shape than before I went there. So why did you send me there? I didn't want that to happen. The Yetzer is complaining to Hashem. It wasn't nice to me to put me in that position. Look what I did to these people. So you see from this that the Yetzer Hara doesn't want them to fail. It wants them to control the Yetzer Hara. Secondly, and this is explicit, and it's about our very pasuk, in Bereishis Rabba, Chaf Beis Vav, it says the following. In Ba Yitzrecha, Sikhacha. If the Yetzer comes and it wants to play with you and entice you, then samcheyu b'divrei Torah, make it happy with divrei Torah. And there's a pasuk about that. And then it says, if you do that, if you learn Torah with it, mala ani alecha ki'ilu barosas be'ez olamos, tatsur shalom, etc., etc. There's a pasuk there. Then it goes on to say, okay, so you know what you're supposed to do. If the Yetzer comes, learn Torah. But what if you think, no, I can't do that. The Yetzer is just too strong. B'im tomar she'eino b'rishuscha. If you say it's not in your power, you just can't do that. The Yetzer is too strong. To that, says Hashem back, kvar hichtavti b'Torah, I already wrote for you in the Torah, v'eilecha t'shukaso, v'ata timshal bo. It wants that you should rule over it. It wants, it cares about you. It's t'shuka. Its concern is for you. It wants you to notice what's presented by it, and then for you to take those, maybe the sensual aspects of life, and rule over it. The Yetzer doesn't want you to become sunk in sin. Just the opposite. And you have the power. That's the Torah says that. And the Yetzer wants that, and you can rule over Yetzer. So this is what Hashem is telling Cain. It's true that for the moment, your wealth and your, maybe your, you have an inclination towards self-centeredness, maybe from your name and from your temperament, but you can override that, and you can overpower that. You have the capacity to do that. So put things into perspective and know what to do with those desires. Realize that your brother Hevel got it right. And now look at these gifts that I gave you and redirect them to some higher purpose. Redirect them to Hashem, because the Yetzer will not and cannot overtake you if you let it rest calmly outside. If you bring it in, and if you build a whole world with it, then it gets to your head, and then you get lost in it, and then you can't win. But the goal of the Yetzer Hara is to present to you an opportunity to make a right choice, and then to make use and master this world for something higher. Apparently, all of this fell on deaf ears for Cain. And the next pasuk Ches, says, Vayomer Cain el Hevel Achiv. So Cain said to Hevel, his brother, we don't know what he said, but they were having some conversation. Vayihi b'yosem basad, it was when they were in the field. Vayokam Cain el Hevel Achiv v'yahargehu. The Cain fell upon his brother, Hevel, and killed him. I'm not sure. It might just be that he thought it, well, I don't know if it was premeditated long before he was going to do this, but this, since he didn't really listen to God's Musa Shmos and God's instruction, he just felt he's been wronged. I'm the firstborn. I did give something to God. What's the big complaint? I'm a nice guy. It's not like I don't recognize there's a God in the world. I gave a donation to the shul. So what? I have a fancy $10 million estate. So what? I give a donation from time to time. Well, he didn't listen to a word God was trying to tell him. And in the end, he still sees Hevel going about his business with Hevel's attitude. And this infuriated him. And I guess, as we saw, this combination of anger and depression, he felt maybe that he wasn't worthy. And the only way to deal with it is to snuff out the competition so that he's the only one around. So whether it was a spontaneous thing or not, but he eliminated the other brother. So now it's just him again. And now he's the master of the world without anyone looking better than him. What exactly happens to Cain next is very tragic. In the psukim that follow, we'll see in the course of time how Cain feels so dejected by God that he goes out and seeks to live a life, a godless life, and to see the empire and the world that he built, a world without God, and to see how ultimately he realizes the futility of what he tried to build. That will come out in poetry later in this parak, to be continued.